Stevie Nicks, Lindsey Buckingham, Christine McVie, John McMee, Mick Fleetwood, and Gypsy. They just defy age, don't they? They just keep rolling along, and we're all the better for it. We will get back to more of my conversation with Richard C. Hoagland as we discuss our solar system and how it appears to have been designed just for our existence here on planet Earth in just a few moments. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie, the intrepid one who's off making more episodes of Beyond Belief. My radio program up here in Toronto is called The Conspiracy Show, and you can hear it Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern on AM 740. And we have about 30 affiliates in the United States and counting, and the website is richardserrett.com. I've set up a special hashtag for this evening. It's Richard C2C. C, of course, is for coast to coast. Richard C, then the number 2C. Richard C2C. If you want to send us a tweet, please do so, and we'd be delighted to read it on the air. And we will get back to our conversation about the moon, Mars, and beyond with Richard C. Hoagland right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Richard C. Hoagland, the website, of course, enterprisemission.com. The moon, Richard, it's almost too precise. It's a remarkable celestial body. It just defies rational explanation of why it's there and why it is the way it is.
It is too precise, and the moon is part of the entire design. And I mean, this is such a huge concept in the new Pluto book, which is the tease for the one that I'm really working on, which is going to be called, I don't know if you like remember it now, The Heritage of Mars, Remembering Forever. Because the first Mars book I did, which has had, what, five editions now, it's called The Monuments of Mars, A City on the Edge of Forever. I don't know how I intuited the forever part, but we're talking about a civilization, Richard, which was millions, if not hundreds of millions of years old.
As our ancestors.
Now pin it down. This solar system started out like all the others that we've cataloged. Again, it is so mind-boggling to have the mainstream community say that the Earth and the solar system are unique. People died, the church, you know, crucified and burned and slashed and drawn and quartered and did everything else during the Inquisition to prevent people from thinking that the Earth was not unique. We went through the whole scientific, you know, the Reformation of the church and then the scientific revolution, and we've come to accept, you know, the mantra, you know, we're so incredibly ubiquitous that we're just average and anything else out there is to follow the pattern that we see here. Well, it doesn't. This is such a huge wake-up call for science, and they're not talking about the size of it, but they're tiptoeing around the edges. Like this paper that came out a few days ago talks about how Jupiter is able to, in the models, in the computer models, careen through the inner solar system. I'm not quite sure how that works because you have to have something that nudges it.
Yeah, I mean, is it a planet or a failed star, Jupiter?
It's a kind of a failed star, a little bit bigger, and it would have been a double star system like Alpha Centauri. Did you see the news today about Alpha Centauri?
I did not.
There's now a paper out. Some guys starting in 2013, 2014, with observations at major big telescopes on the Earth, they got some Hubble time finally. They think they found two super Earths orbiting Alpha Centauri B, which is the second component of Alpha Centauri A, which is a double star system. Actually, it's a triple star system because there's C, which is Proxima Centauri, which is a little closer than the other two, at a little over four light years away. So the next door neighbor has planets, but they're not arranged anything like ours because the farthest one out that they found in this new study orbits every 20.4 days. In fact, it's so damn close to 19.5 days, which another set of planets on the Kepler survey has indeed found, and twice 19.5, 39, that when you start seeing these numbers come up, you begin to wonder if ours is not the only solar system which was tinkered with and or remodeled, and that the Kepler list is actually a check that they're performing on the neighborhood and where the neighbors may have hung out and where the last vestige of this super type 2 civilization that I have proposed that did the remodeling of the solar system hundreds of millions of years ago still may hang out.
The moon, as part of that remodeling, just give us some of the specs on how crucial the moon is to life on this planet.
Well, the first thing that's really weird is if you didn't have the moon, the Earth would pole would go flipping back and forth, you know, like an angry rattlesnake. And that kind of obliquity shift, as it's called, meaning the pole changes angles with the sky, with the stars, not on the surface of the Earth. If you're on the surface of the Earth, you're not feeling anything. This is the inertial attitude, rotational attitude of the Earth relative to the inertial background stellar field. If that changes as rapidly as the calculations without a moon indicate, then life on Earth, certainly advanced life, but maybe even life itself, would not have been possible. The only reason that you got life on Earth in these models is because the moon is an incredibly stabilizing influence gravitationally in terms of standard Newtonian mechanics. Well, in our model, the reason that all works is because after you had an Earth and Mars and Venus and Mercury and the rest of the system rearranged, literally rearranged, Richard, can you think of the gargantuan anti-gravity, anti-inertial hyperdimensional technology required to literally, like billiard balls, shift planets around an orbiting star?
It's beyond my comprehension.
All it takes is technological control of gravity and inertia. Well, bingo.
A level 2 civilization.
Another aspect of the Enterprise mission's research over the last 30-some years has been to verify that this physics is real, and it can manipulate and change inertia and gravity. So all you'd have to do is build a machine to scale it up. We've got the measurements. And some of them are published in this new book, Pluto, New Horizons for a Lost Horizon, on the North Atlantic Books website and Amazon.
The reason
I'm plugging the book,
okay,
because I'm going to give another plug in a few minutes and connect all this to how we live here on Earth, Richard. It's really crucial to understand that part of this revolution, part of the second age of space, is not only the ability to allow ordinary folks to go out there, but to allow the stunning breakthroughs in science and treasure and technology and archives, the wonders and wisdom of this ancient civilization's libraries, to come back here and totally transform the Earth. Well, later tonight, I'm going to talk about a friend of mine, Charlie Lewis, who is an engineer. He's actually a polymath. He does a whole bunch of stuff really well. He's been a professional musician. He actually sang for years with a group you might have heard of. Oh, you're much, much too young. Called the Moby Grape.
Oh, I am familiar.
Won a whole bunch of awards.
Sure.
And all that.
Sure.
Well,
I'm not that
Charlie
young.
Was one of the major players in Moby Grape. He's also been a civil engineer. He's designed airports. He basically reorganized LAX so it works. He saw some very bizarre things there the night of 9/11 that, when he's on the show someday, which it will be soon, to talk about this incredible invention he's got, he'll maybe tell you about the background on, or maybe George, you know, the background on LAX and 9/11. This is a guy who's been around the block, around the planet, actually around the solar system quite a few times, and he's still kicking. Anyway, he's got this technology, which, Richard, is directly derivative from the physics we have figured out and measured, the same physics the ancients used to move planets around the solar system like billiard balls, and that technology manifests in an engine, an attachment, a modification of an ordinary IC engine, internal combustion engine, so that it burns hydrogen in a reactor that is attached to the top of the engine, circulates water through a coil, and then you electrolyze it and then use the hydrogen to dump into the cylinders, and that basically lets you go down the road with zero pollution, as testified by the California air pollution folks that actually did the measurements and were astonished that they couldn't measure any pollution coming from Charlie's car. But the really amazing thing that Charlie himself didn't realize until I pointed it out to him, and this is years ago, is that his device, as he works with it, should not work. As you know, if you know any physics, Richard, the equation reads that you get as much energy out of splitting water and into oxygen and hydrogen as you get from putting them back together in a fuel cell or something like
that.
The
second law, right, of thermodynamics.
The second law of thermodynamics. You can't get more out than you put in. Charlie's machine, Charlie's engine, gets more out than it puts in. I've ridden in it. I've done the measurements. I've looked at it. I've looked at the reports. And he himself was so excited about the zero pollution part and the fact that it's cheaper than gasoline that he really didn't realize that he was sitting on something that was so amazing that it takes us into the 23rd, it takes us into Star Trek land. It takes us into the realm of a true type 2 civilization, taking the physics and make it work for ordinary people here on Earth. So the third thing I want to do tonight, and the reason I've been plugging the book is because if we make any money on the book, I'm going to take $1,000 and I'm going to dump it into Charlie's Kickstarter campaign from the Enterprise mission when he launches in the next few weeks, maybe even a few days, his entire technology in front of the entire Coast audience.
Where did Charlie get this technology? I mean, how did it come to him?
Well, he's been working with another inventor. You know, inventors tend to hang out, you know, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates. By the way, did you see the story the other day where Bill Gates says he couldn't hold a candle to Steve Jobs when it came to computers?
I did see that, yeah. I mean, well, what did you make of it?
Well, who knows? I mean, Bill is managerial and business, and Steve was invention and creativity. So they were a match made in heaven.
Yeah, indeed. You know, yeah, you have to have the business mind. Absolutely.
Look, you know and I know that Windows and Apple would not be the companies they are unless they had good, healthy, strong competition. The competition
That's for sure.
made them the top of the heap. Two totally different systems that you can go out anywhere in the world and now use. That's a revolution. That's the equivalent in the internet and cyberspace of what I'm talking about in terms of space. Access to space, access to who we really used to be, access to our own heritage, access to ways to make the world so much better that it is almost impossible to envision it unless you go back to the serials in the 30s and 40s and 50s, you know, Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon and, you know, the so-called world of tomorrow, you know, from the World's Fair in 64, to look at the kind of future that we can have. Because we're not eternally committed and locked into fossil fuels, and we know those are, in the long term, very bad for this planet.
Richard, it sounds like we may be on the same page in this sense that I don't believe there are limits to growth. Do you concur?
Well, do you ever talk to Joseph Farrell?
I do, yes, good friend of mine.
Dr. Joseph Farrell? Okay. He and I have had some stunning conversations over the years, and he actually put a lot of this into one of his latest books. I think it was The Babylon Banksters.
Yes.
Where he talked about open and closed systems. The world is currently going nuts. This latest airplane thing is only one trivial example. Sorry, I'm so sorry for all those people. But on the scale of 7 billion people, imagine if everybody goes through something like that in the decades ahead. And that's where the projections of all the curves are heading. We're heading for disaster unless we change the game. We need a game changer. And space, according to Kennedy and the report from Iron Mountain, was the ultimate game changer because it changes the human condition from a closed system back to an open system in which we used to live and why we lived so long and so well until something stunning happened, and that, of course, is what we have to figure out. But we need the time to figure it out, and we need the different places to put human beings in this century so that we do not run into the all our eggs in one fragile basket scenario.
We've got a break coming up in a few moments, but I want to start the discussion now, and we'll continue on after the break, and that is, again, about the moon and what China discovered on the moon. I know you've written about this extensively on your website. Let's start discussing that, because we know that a couple of years ago China started their unmanned missions to the moon. And what exactly did they find there?
Well, they found the ruins. you know, long and short of it, go to enterprisemission.com. Just scroll down the page till you see the big Chinese banner and the ruins and the flag and the title and all that. Click on that and read, to your heart's content, the stunning confirmation that the Chinese quietly carried out at the end of last year, last December, when they landed this unmanned Chang 3 robot on the moon, autonomously under computer control. And then a few hours later, they rolled off a little Jade Rabbit rover, which for 2 weeks went puttering around this landing site until, you know, I think it was the second sunset that did it in because of mechanical problems, and then it just could sit there and twitter home plaintively, "I'm here, I'm still alive, I'm here." But in the interim, they took stunning images, Richard, and they posted them on the Chinese Army military website showing these ruins. Now, what that does instantly is inform all those in the know, and you and I and the Coast audience are among those in the know, that all this stuff is real. The first thing the Chinese did was confirm their ancient glass ruins of inestimable age on the moon, and where there are ruins, there are going to be libraries. And with current technology, with current stupid primitive rockets, not forgetting all the neat stuff they have in the back room, the anti-gravity stuff, which I can document and others can document much, much better, have been developed and quietly hidden from view for the last half century, the same time they've been lying to us about everything that's out there. The fact is that even with rockets, you can go to the moon in 3 days. How do we know? Apollo proved that. Oh, wait. Apollo was a fake. Apollo, you know, was done by, you know, the U.S. government to, you know, outbox the Russians. No, the Chinese have verified on their CCD electronic imagery, the same stuff the Apollo astronauts photographed on film almost half a century ago on the moon, looking the same way with the same crenellations and the same geometry and the same extent, meaning you have independent confirmation. And what's even more amazing, Richard, is you have independent political confirmation. When would you imagine the Chinese military would want to rescue NASA's bacon by proving that NASA didn't fake the moon missions? The moon missions, in fact, took place as usual, and what's been fake has been NASA reporting about what the astronauts actually found on the moon all those years ago.
Where did the Jade Rabbit land in 2013? In relation to the Apollo 11, the other Apollo missions on the moon, whereabouts? The Sea of Rain.
Well, we landed about 1,200 miles to the northwest in a place called Mare Imbrium, as opposed to the Sea of Tranquility. Maybe a little further. I haven't measured it recently. But what's really astonishing, and this is where things get really squirrely, Richard, this audience knows, and we'll see if you do too, that in my presentations over the years, as we've looked into this physics, which we learned from the geometry of the ruins at Cydonia to recap what's in Monuments of Mars, two numbers came out over and over and over again, 19.5 and 39, all right? 19.5 is the angle at which north or south, all over the solar system, you have these energetic upwellings of internal lava, excuse me, or on the outer giant planets, you have huge storms like the Great Red Spot, which swirl around at 19.5 south on Jupiter, and you have similar features on Saturn and Uranus and Neptune coming and going in weird cycles, but apparently modulated by the physics of the entire solar system, which isn't constant. It is changing based on the orbits and revolutions of the members of the solar system. So with that as a baseline, where do the Chinese suddenly, without any warning, land their unmanned spacecraft on the moon? At 19.5 west. Now, the odds of that, it actually was 19.51 west. The odds of that, to be accurate, to within 1/100th of a degree, the probability, going back to the probability discussion, is thousands to one that that's an accident.
All right, very symbolic, obviously, and we'll find out what that means exactly when my conversation with Richard C. Hoagland continues here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. And sitting in for George Norrie, that's The Animals, Eric Burdon and The Animals. We've got to get out of this place. Sounds pretty good, pretty fresh for a song that is about 50 years old. What did he mean, we've got to get out of this place? Planet Earth, perhaps? If we are to survive as a species, maybe that is the answer. We've got to get off of this rock. Back to more of my conversation with Richard C. Hoagland on just that very issue when Coast to Coast continues in a moment. Let me just remind you that my conference is coming up in April, April the 26th. It's a Sunday night. It's called Follow the Truth 2. You can get all the details. We've got seven amazing speakers coming to Oshawa, just east of Toronto, a stone's throw from where I'm sitting. Again, Follow the Truth, and the website is followthetruth.tv. We've got amazing speakers talking about the Shroud of Turin, the Zapruder film, the Lost Tribes of Israel, UFOs, Angels, and Gods, remote viewing, spirit communication, and electronic harassment. Again, that's followthetruth.tv. All right, when we come back, Richard C. Hoagland here on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines coming up in less than 20 minutes. Right now, Richard C. Hoagland stays with us, and we'll get to your calls for Richard as well. Richard, before the break, you were talking about when this unmanned Chinese probe landed on the moon back in, I think, December 2013. Last minute, they changed the landing site, and you're saying that this was very symbolic. They were supposed to land... it was the Bay of Rainbows, and they landed in the Sea of Rain. And you're saying that was no accident.
Well, I don't think it was an accident because celestial mechanics is very predictable. You can predict the movement of planets ahead hundreds, thousands of years. You can certainly predict satellites. You know, well, even hours before they were landing, they were directing everybody, all their press, you know, releases and their wonderful television. They did really great television during the landing. It took me way back many years when I was at CBS watching landings on various places on all the 42 TV screens in the control room. But what they didn't do was tell anybody where they were going to really land until they did it at 19.5 west. And the other, the latitude is even more provocative because that was at 44 north. So if you were the Chinese and you were publicly showing that A, NASA had been lying to the American people for 50 years, and B, you were willing to show this data to the world, and you were communicating secret messages in a kind of an arcane code, which secret society used to do all the time. 19.5 is easy. That means physics. That means revolution. It means total transformation of the way we do business in space and on Earth and every place else if you democratize this technology. What's the other number? What does 44 mean? Any guesses, Richard?
Well, it sounds like some sort of a geometric figure.
No, 44. Think political.
Oh, the 44.
The 44th president of the United States of America.
Okay.
The Chinese message was to Obama, either make this stuff known or we will.
Ah, disclosure. Okay.
And the clock is ticking. And the Europeans have been going out to this astonishing comet, 67P, sending back stunning images day after day since last August, where the thing is obviously an ancient, incredibly eroded space habitat, an artifact. It's not a natural ice ball or a snowball, the astronomer at Harvard, Fred Whipple, said decades ago. It's an ancient spaceship still spewing out internal gases from oxygen and nitrogen and other reservoirs of volatiles to have kept, I don't know how many millions of people alive in a volume 2.5 miles across, and now it's in total ruin, except studded across the surface here and there, we see very bright, very sharp, very geometric, very symmetrical, very streamlined, very spaceship-like looking stuff, which looks like much more recent civilizations in the long and incredibly storied history of the human race that we're not being allowed to know about, actually sent probes out to 67P, just like the Rosetta probe and the little Philae lander, and they landed on the comet to sample it because maybe this object is an archive. Maybe, in fact, it is like other exotic, bizarre objects scattered around the solar system. It's where NASA and the other space agencies are going, because that's where the real history of who we really are has really been stored for literally millions and millions and millions of years, as a prelude to the NASA flyby mission in a few months of Pluto, which in the book, in Pluto New Horizons for a Lost Horizon, I say flatly, with supporting data, is potentially an ancient archive placed in that exotic orbit to attract our attention and get us to ultimately go there.
Well, going back to these structures on the moon, and are they not visible? Would they not be visible to an amateur, someone with a telescope here on Earth? Could we not see them from Earth?
They are. They have been. When I wrote with Mike Barra, Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, which I did not do with North Atlantic, I did it with Feral Press. That's also in, I think, three editions or four editions, something like that. But anyway, in that book, there are photographs from high-end amateurs. I found three amateurs who were using top-of-the-line equipment, cameras, telescopes, electronic image processing, computer algorithms, you know, noise suppression, the nine yards. I mean, these guys are basically professionals, except they don't get paid to do what they do. They do it because they love it. And amateur astronomy has galloped so far ahead of where it was when I joined it back in the 60s, you wouldn't even recognize it. I mean, you can have observatories now sitting in folks' garages or in their backyards that can give you images of the universe and planets that no telescope on Earth even two decades ago could give you. None. Zero. Not even Palomar or Keck or whatever. And now guys with 14-inch telescopes are bringing back images, like Damian Peach in England, who's a brilliant guy at this. Just, you know, Google his name. Look at his archives, his galleries. He's photographing these ruins on the moon by defeating the blurring effects of the Earth's atmosphere by electronically storing thousands of images taken through a telescope on something called a webcam. And then the software records and saves and stacks on top of each image only the ones where the blurring has been stopped because the atmosphere froze for that moment and the telescope camera took a picture in that millisecond when the atmosphere was still. And by summing these hundreds and thousands of images, you can get images of the moon like the Apollo astronauts sitting in orbit, but from a 250,000 miles away, and it's not controlled, it's not any, you know, the black ops guys, the men in black don't show up and say you can't put these pictures on the internet. And so the images of these stunning, awesome, megalithic ruins, in every sense of that word, meaning big, big stuff, are lying there for amateur astronomers with the right techniques and the right expertise to photograph them every night the moon is visible, and they have done so. And they're all over the web. Just go looking. Or we'll assemble them in the next book, the one after Pluto, and you can go to one-stop shopping and you can see it all there. Now, tonight, you've noticed I've plugged a couple of books kind of mercilessly, Richard, and I'm kind of not sorry I'm doing that, because the only way we're going to get the kind of technological revolution that's going to save this planet is if we somehow extract out of the dark, you know, sciences and the black ops crowd these technologies, and we make them public and we democratize them and we get them out there so that we can get off fossil fuels and all the other things that are killing the Earth and defiling the environment and ruining the ecosystems from pole to pole, and we get with the program and become a Type 2 civilization as rapidly as possible. And my friend Charlie has a technology which can do that and do it right now. No imagining, no whatever. There's going to be some developments around his technology in the next few weeks that are going to boggle your mind. And all I will say is there is a major, how can I say this without giving away secrets? There's a major public component from Hollywood that's going to be involved with Charlie very soon in a very public way. So this is moving at warp 9, and I don't want you guessing, no guessing, because it only works if you don't, you know, do it the way that the guesses.
No, I understand. I, when I think of Charlie, and I haven't met Charlie, I don't know Charlie, I'm thinking of people like Stanley Myers and the water engine, and I'm just hoping, and I'm not being flippant here or disrespectful, I hope Charlie has some protection around him, because this is very dangerous technology.
Well, hang on. Let's not sow paranoid seeds. That was then, this is now. The technology, it's time to come out. Why do you think Elon Musk has been given permission? I will underscore that. Why has Elon Musk been given permission after half a century to do what Wernher von Braun wanted to do a half century ago, but was never allowed to do it? What do you think the magic is that Elon is using to bring back rockets and reuse them to land the first stage and someday the second stage and third stage safely back on Earth, truck them over to the assembly building, dust off the dust, and put them on the pad and fire them again, which is going to slash the cost of you and me and George, because I promised, going into space to 1/100th, if not less, of the current cost to send people to and from space and bring them back safely. Why is that revolution suddenly taking place on Elon Musk's watch? Is there something magical? Has he figured out something nobody else figured out? No. It's steamboat time. The lid is being lifted, and we can see it in the NASA releases of images of stunning ancient stuff, artificial stuff on Mars, and ESA, and the Chinese. And what are the Indians doing tonight? The Indian nation. They have a spacecraft orbiting Mars called the MOM mission. Remember that awful movie, Moms from Mars, or Mothers from Mars, or something like that, a few years ago? Anyway, the MOM mission, the Mars Orbital Mission, that's what the acronym stands for, is measuring globally on Mars the same thing that the Curiosity rover suddenly, surprisingly, just a few days ago found in Gale Crater, which is methane, which comes and goes in a sporadic, non-cyclic appearance and disappearance, which has baffled the geologists, the biologists, the exobiologists, and the Indian government is perfectly positioned to take measurements globally, far beyond the Gale Crater where Curiosity is roving, to see what the global methane concentrations are to match what the Earth-based astronomers from, you know, a few years ago found with Earth-based telescopes, and then put it all together in a picture that says either Mars now has current living life of some kind releasing methane, or, even more interesting, Mars is releasing methane from underground reservoirs where, like fossil fuel generation here on Earth from ancient organisms, the methane is coming from decaying organisms buried under huge mounds of rubble and muds and silts and sediments and debris during the Mars catastrophe millions of years ago. And the methane is not from current biology, except maybe a few microbes. It's from the fermentation and decay of the once vibrant biosphere that NASA is in every way possible letting us see, with increasing revelations of the science underpinning biology, like methane that it announced a few days ago, and then a few days later, it announced it found nitrogen in nitrates, which are critical for any life cycle organisms on this planet. So drip, 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 creeping disclosure is well underway, and at some point, the rubber is going to meet the road, and we're going to have disclosure. And if Steve is listening, it's going to be artifacts first and little guys or big guys in spaceships second.
I also understand, Richard, that the Chinese are very interested in helium-3, which is to be found in abundance on the moon.
Not really.
No?
No, it's a total canard. It's a hoax. It's a fake. There is not a helium-3 reactor on the planet, Richard. Have you seen one? Have you seen any tests? Has anybody done any experiments? There's nothing. There's nothing technological to dump helium-3 in, even if someone was getting ready to do it, and they're not. But what it does do is to give the Chinese a wonderful excuse, where the 19.5 is a code, that they're going to the moon to look at resources and the physics of the moon, up to and including maybe the physics to be found in artifacts they could bring back to Earth. Do you know the Chinese are now prepping for a moon sample return mission to bring some of the stuff that it roves around and finds back to laboratories in China? Well, if you look at the pictures, from the Chang 3 mission and from U2, it landed amid an ancient city, and what those things that look like boulders, in fact, are not. They're pieces that fell out of the dome overhead of high-tech, very remarkable glasses, which have extraordinary technological properties if you analyze them with the proper instrumentation. And isn't it interesting that the Chinese have published no in-depth analyses of the surface materials found around the landing site at all, other than the pre-mission projections of what they would find in the way of basalts and creep and various rare earths and stuff like that. They also did a complete seismic survey of what's underneath, and if you look at the seismic pictures they published on the web, there are regular layers that can be interpreted one of two ways, either ordinary geology or layers of buried cities under the surface of the moon that we saw on the pictures.
So I get the sense here, Richard, very clearly that the Chinese are really, tightening the screws on the Americans in terms of disclosure. How much longer do they have then before they must disclose or have things disclosed for them?
Well, given that we apparently do live on a pluralistic planet, and given that the kind of technologies that have been held in deep, deep, deep cover, like Charlie's. By the way, I need to give out Charlie's website. HEAE.BIZ. HEAE.BIZ. It stands for High End Alternative Energy. HEAE.BIZ. Because with Charlie and Musk and a whole bunch of garage inventors, the governments of the world, the suppressors, the folks that have been keeping all this secret all over the planet, unified, the Russian program, the European program, the Chinese program, our NASA program, they're about to get upstaged by the private sector, by good old enterprise, free enterprise. What a nice ring to it, enterprise.
Yes, indeed. Hey, quick question, Richard. Now, these people that have been covering up this, they've got blood on their hands. Do you give them amnesty?
Well, no, don't say that. We don't know that. We know that they will be accused of hiding everything, which is why they're dumping all the good stuff into the files, because they know that most reporters these days are so lazy, they won't do a Google search past a couple of years. And if they find artifacts and they find us jumping up and down saying, look at that, look at that, look at that, NASA will be able to claim politically successfully that they have never been hiding anything going back to the beginning of NASA. And if they actually slip in really interesting things from the early, early, early days, which they've been doing quietly, even in the Apollo archives, but not telling anybody, they will get away with it. And I don't give a damn. I don't want to send anybody to Leavenworth. I want to get the human race off one ball of dust, because as Elon Musk says, unless we get out of the Earth basket, we are trapped. His desperation to get the human race planted on Mars is one of the driving forces behind his entire company. He's not your average entrepreneur. He's not your average billionaire. All the stuff he's doing could have been done 50 years ago, so why wasn't it? Because, Richard, in our model, it wasn't politically time, and now it is, and it's like the 1950s all over again. Have you seen those pictures? See them on the Coast website, because Lex has somehow beamed up and I have not heard a peep from him, even though I sent the images over hours ago. So you might find out from our producer tonight if these images can get posted on the Coast website.
They'll get on that. Richard, listen, I have to run, and what a great pleasure finally getting to meet with you and speak with you. Thank you so much for this. EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland. Open lines on a Friday night going into Saturday morning here on Coast to Coast. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. You, me, and the telephone. Please.